Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? The great thing about podcasts is that you don't have to be a professional to do it. Anybody can publish anything. But there are a lot of questions to ask when you first get started. I know I had a bunch. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other big places people like to listen? And how do I make money off my podcast? Because it truly is a labor of love. To answer every one of these questions, it's really simple, actually. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. Even I can use it. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors too, so you can get paid to podcast. I love Anchor because it's simple to use. I can record an episode or just a thought on my phone and upload it right then and there. They provide background music and also some sounds to really make your podcast pop. So if you've ever wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. To join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor, that's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. And thank you again so much for joining us. And I'm very excited to have an old friend back. He's an old friend now because I've not actually met him in person, but I've talked to him once and now we're buddies. So you may have heard Joe Hudak on one of our original series for veteran suicide, and him and his wife Julie came on and talked about the family dynamic and some of the struggles that they faced when Joe had to transition back from a very challenging assignment in the armed forces to coming home and being a civilian and all of the different dynamics that they had to go through as a married couple once they got together. But we really didn't get all of Joe's story, and I was told that there's a little bit more to it. So he agreed to come back for part two to talk a little bit more about his struggles and the things that he had to deal with to stay on this planet, because he did suffer for some mental challenges as well as two suicide attempts. And we don't hear a lot of stories about how people have come up from the depths and actually survived. We hear about all the bad things that happened, but we don't hear the stories of resiliency. So I'm glad that Joe came back to kind of give us some insight on what he did to survive. So thank you so much for joining us again, Joe. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So Joe, we're going to dive right in, and it's going to be heavy, but you've come to expect that from me. So we're going to start off on your experience when you joined the Army. You said that you've enjoyed the job. And what was it about being in the armed forces that you loved?
What I really liked about it was the camaraderie. It was a good bunch of people. The job was outdoors. It was fun. It was, you know, it was everything that a little boy wanted as a child. You know, I get to go out in the woods, play with guns, run around, play Army. It's what I did as a kid, and it's what I enjoyed as an adult, especially early on like that.
Well, that does sound incredibly intriguing and attractive for someone who wanted to be in the armed forces. Now, there was some times where I think things got a little tough, and you had told us before that you had decided that you couldn't do the job anymore. Can you share the story about what happened leading up to that?
What happened was on my last trip to Afghanistan, we were doing our normal job and we were searching a village looking for militants or insurgents, and came across this guy who was hiding out, and I saw for the first time a human through my night optics, my scope, and it really changed my life, kind of how I thought about things, because no longer was that guy just a target. He was a father and a brother and a husband and all of these things. And, you know, then I started to connect on a human level to people that I was hunting. And like, that's not going to work out.
And what was it like for your group, your brothers, when you realized that it just wasn't going to work anymore and you were done? How did they react?
Well, it was a confluence of issues on that trip that actually propelled me to leave my team at the time, because we lost a couple guys to enemy fire while I was there, and I was the medic that worked on them. And so my teammates started to, some of them were blaming me for the deaths, for me not being able to save the guys. So in seeing that there was a lot of bad blood and my integrity was being questioned and whatnot, it just seemed like a good time to, one, I couldn't really do the job of like hunting people now that I felt like connected to them. And then my peers, my teammates, they didn't know that about me. They just kind of, they let me go because they knew that I was feeling, hurt, upset, whatever, about them blaming me for the deaths of our guys. So yeah, it was just, they didn't really know that I left because I started to feel human again.
You think that at some point they were also feeling it too, but they were too scared and there was too much of a stigma to admit it. So they were kind of projecting their own fears on you.
That's a really big question. I mean, I don't know what they were feeling. What I've found in my own personal experience is that any man or woman who's gone off to war and faced combat, when they come back, eventually they start to feel the weight of that violence. And, you know, that manifests in different ways. Some people, you know, become workaholics, some become alcoholics, some become clergy members. You know, it just, everybody deals with combat in their own way. So I couldn't begin to think about what my teammates, what they've gone through.
Now, you've said in the past that you decided to go across country to a desk job and had a lot of downtime and it didn't work out for you. It wasn't good for you. What happened exactly?
I went to a desk job. I was part of an ROTC unit and I was teaching, you know, the next batch of officers. And I went from being a special forces operator in a community with a bunch of fairly like-minded people, you know, and we worked all together. And then when I got to that teaching job, I didn't have the community. I didn't have friends. I didn't have family. I was totally isolated. I wasn't doing my job. I didn't know what I was doing. There were a lot of isolation points. There was a lot of just confusion on my part. There was, you know, it just really, there was too much downtime for me. I was running a marathon at 100 miles an hour every day for the better part of 17 years. And then I stopped and I was sitting at a desk and I was told to just be there just in case someone came in and wanted to talk. And like, I didn't know what to do and I didn't have any real way to excel at what I was doing. And I just had a lot of downtime and a lot of time in my head and knew I wasn't feeling well. And so I went to go talk to mental health about it. And that, you know, started me down the road to become an inpatient.
And you had mentioned before that you were inpatient for 18 months. So what do you do when you're inpatient for 18 months? What happens and what's the process like?
So I was in different facilities over that time frame. And so I did different programs with each of them. Basically, as an inpatient, the weirdest issue about being an inpatient is you came there because you're crazy. So once you're in there and you have that role, then people just treat you like you're crazy. And it can be very difficult at times to really express yourself because they think you're just being crazy. So it's a catch-22 once you're in there. A lot of what I did in there was chit-chat therapy and psychopharmaceuticals, you know, the mental health medicines. So like I did that for a long time. There was a ton of other therapies in there. There's talk therapy and I met Julie doing some experimental study that she was doing. There's all kinds of different ways in which they were trying to get at the core issue and peel back the layers of the onion.
Do you think that and this is off topic, you can pass if you want, but do you think that the general misunderstanding of what veterans go through and understanding of PTSD kind of put you in that situation where they didn't know how to help you? Was it more harmful than helpful at the time?
Harmful than helpful. I don't know. I mean, the first place I went was not very helpful for me. And they told me after I'd been there for about 30 days that like people like me just don't feel. And I just had to get past that and recognize that. And yet like my emotions were bubbling over like a stovepot that's been left on too long. And that I think just came from the fact that they hadn't had very much contact with people from the special operations community in the mental health services. And so I think I was just initially, I was just met with their preconceived idea of what an operator is like and what we're capable of. And I don't know. I it wasn't super helpful, but I got to places and I worked with care counselors that really helped me out and kept me on track and actually listened to me and took me to different places wherever I needed to go that would help me heal. And I owe my life to the Care Coalition and the people in it who helped take me through all those different treatment modalities. And like a lot of people, the vast majority of people don't get that. And that's kind of a bummer.
And do you think that your breakthrough was while you were inpatient or was it after you got out?
I think for me, I've never had like one specific aha, burning bush talking to me kind of moment. I've had a lot of little moments that have added up and, you know, slow and steady wins the race and it's constantly getting better and better. I have had some nice peaks. And I think one of my biggest aha moments of many was Julie and I went and did a 10-day silent meditation retreat in Joshua Tree, California. It's like out in the middle of the desert there. And it was a silent meditation for 10 straight days. And we were meditating for like 11 hours a day. And it was awesome. I just sat there with my thoughts for 10 days and made some peace inside my mind, which was kind of nice.
And I think some people might find that incredibly scary. I probably couldn't go 5 minutes within my mind. I'm working on it, but that takes a lot of strength and resiliency to put yourself through that and to come out feeling better, because I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to remaining curious, right? So when they told me in 2011 that I had PTSD and traumatic brain injury and, you know, I was prone to depression, anxiety, and all sorts of other things, like I was like, okay, well, let me just ask for help and I'll do anything and everything that everyone tells me to get to not be like this mentally. And I had, you know, going back to before, like I had a lot of guardian angels who really watched over me and led me by the hand. And I just maintained this willingness that I don't want to be my label. I don't want to be my diagnosis. I want to be Joe and I want to be stable and happy and be there for my wife and son.
I think one good thing that did come out of you being inpatient is you did get to meet the beautiful Julie. You have to admit that.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, that was awesome.
So you had mentioned in the past that you had had 2 suicide attempts. Can we talk about what led up to that and what eventually saved you?
So both times I was saved because somebody was there at just the right time and I was willing to go with them. What led up to those 2 attempts? Really, you know, I've heard that like, people lament that suicidal people are so selfish. And like, I kind of bristle at that because like, I wasn't being selfish. I wasn't contributing. I wasn't being there. I wasn't a good person to be around. And I just didn't want tomorrow to be like today. You know, it was just, this is terrible. And like, I don't want anybody else to get this nastiness on them if they're near me. So I looked at it as kind of like, I just need to do this because I'm not useful or helpful to the rest of the planet. And this sucks. And I didn't know any other way. I tried going to an AA meeting, and like I started bringing up stuff that I know now should really be brought up in a PTSD support group and not an AA room. I get that. I didn't know that at the time. And people just looked at me like I was crazy. And they're like, we can't really help you. You know, this is stuff that's outside of what we help with. And I was like, okay. So I like totally isolated. Yeah. And I didn't know how to ask loudly enough for help. So it took the two suicide attempts to, you know, get me to the people that would actually say, we can help you. And okay, let's do that then.
So sometimes it's just being persistent and advocating for yourself and your care.
Oh yeah. I think everyone should advocate for themselves in their medical care. You know, when I was an Army medic, like I would try to inform my patients just as much as I possibly could, because I wanted them to be knowledgeable and make their own medical decisions. Just use me and my aid bag as a tool, not as a way of life.
Okay, not on the list, but I just thought of it. You can pass if you want. Thinking back on your journey, because it is a journey, is there anything that you would change or do differently, knowing what you know now about the status of mental health care?
No, I mean, I've thought about that. Like, would I do anything differently? And realistically, everything that I've done and been a part of has led me to currently where I'm at. And I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be in a better position spiritually and emotionally and everything. I'm truly blessed to be where I am. And it's only because of the experiences that I've had that I'm in the place that I'm in.
We're lucky enough that you're willing to share your story, because you may be affecting somebody and not even know it, because it's one of those things that people don't really talk about. And we've talked about this a lot, but you know, if somebody were to go to you back in the day when you were struggling and saying, man, I've been here before, there's hope, there's light, it's not going to be like this forever, would that have changed anything for you?
Yeah, if I would have had somebody in my life who would have come and showed me that, yeah. I mean, I was desperate.
After you got out of inpatient, what did you do then? Where did you go and what'd you do?
After I got out of inpatient, I was to be medically retired. And so what they wanted to do was my command was going to take care of me and basically just put me in the gym until I hit my 20. So they helped. One, they wanted to, it wasn't just to like stretch me out to 20. They wanted to actually make sure that I was safe, sane, and stable enough to retire out of the military. So they kept a pretty close eye on me for the next while, until I got to a place where I could retire. And my son just walked in, so sorry about that. All right, I'm back. Sorry about that.
I know how it is. He can come talk if he wants to, you know.
He'll talk your ear off.
What would you suggest to others who are isolating now and need some inspiration and courage to make that first move to get support and help? I know it's really hard and it's a really big first step, but you've mentioned that it's not as simple as just saying, hey, I'm waving the flag, I need help. There's a little bit more work to it, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The thing in my personal life story is that I didn't even know what I didn't know. I didn't know. I wasn't in touch with my emotions. I wasn't very self-aware. I didn't really ponder, you know, how am I thinking? What am I thinking? It wouldn't have been really beneficial for someone to come and offer to help me and tell me that there's another way, because I wasn't looking for another way until I was at the very end, and I was desperately looking for a way. But I didn't know any of the, I mean, I knew as a medic what the warning signs were and what people look like and symptomology and treatment and stuff like that. But I really didn't know that in myself. I was completely disconnected from my own awareness. So if someone said, hey, I can help you, I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
On a personal note, do you go out and you mentor people who have come out of the military? How are you with that outreach? Because I feel like you'd be like a good, you know, military big brother kind of thing.
Yeah, I would totally do that. And I'm always around to help in any way that I can for anybody. But I don't know of anybody that's doing that. And I'm not like actively putting myself on Craigslist as a potential buddy. So
that could have serious issues.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Call Joe. He'll be your buddy.
Oh my. That could be bad. Right? Do you want to talk a little bit about the holistic wellness that you found? Because we kind of touched on it in the last interview, but I'm really fascinated about the organization that you work with and some of the alternative methodologies that they have.
Yeah. For me, like my holistic experience is when I was ready and I asked for help and I put myself into the hands of a care team that, you know, took care of me and I just did whatever the next therapy was, they found all these different therapies to go through. And so like some of the easy ones that everyone's familiar with in like mental health treatment nowadays is the, you know, everybody talking about yoga and acupuncture and Reiki and acupressure. And so like I did some of those and I did a lot of those actually. And it was really helpful. And when I got completely off of my psychotropic medications, things like yoga and meditation, those are my therapies. That is my medicine and it works for me and it might not work for somebody else. And I totally understand that. But I didn't like being on psychotropic medications with their side effects and their issues. It wasn't my thing. So I got into those holistic practices. Plus I went and did equine therapy and dolphin therapy and like just communing with nature. And that's while I was active duty. Fast forward and I'm retired and it's like a year ago or whatever. And I meet up with this organization, Warriors Live On, through a friend of a friend. And the executive director's name is Eva. And I was telling Eva, it's like, you have a great program here. We need to get it to everybody. So she said, you know, this is what we do. This is who we are. And like initially the catching point for me was they do acupuncture. And I was like, yes, I'll get in on some acupuncture. And they're like, oh yeah. And we have yoga and we have this outdoor trek that we do. And I was like, this is an amazing organization. And she's like, oh yeah. And our main thing is, organic intelligence and somatic experiencing. And that's a chit chat form of therapy that focuses on, how the body's feeling, where the emotions are in the body. And, it's a trippy model. And I think it works really, really well. But I think holistic medicine for me is a great option and it fits what I'm looking to do and where I want to, what aspects I want to heal at what particular time.
I think it's important for people not to knock it before you try it, because it may be a little bit woo, but it might be the missing piece in your puzzle that you're missing. Because I was talking to Jeremy Stalnecker and we're talking about the spiritual injury, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you have a affliction to, you know, the traditional God or whatever you believe in. It really is an injury to your spirit. And however you connect to your spirit, whether it is prayer or Reiki or yoga or acupuncture, you got to pick what works for you, right?
Yeah, totally. And I think going into a therapy, a new therapy experience with an open mind is super important. I think actually having an open mind and going through your day with an open mind is just super important because it seems to be nicer that way. But yeah, if you have an open mind, great things will happen. I grew up in the military as an infantry guy, and then in special forces as a Western trained medical provider. Like, you tell me that hot rocks on my back in certain areas are going to take away my hip pain, I'm going to tell you to get bent, because that doesn't make any sense in Western medicine to where I was trained. And then, like, you know, go into it and do it and see, yeah, you know what? It's a little bit different, but it's working. So I'll just keep trying it. And like, if it doesn't work, then I'll go try something else too.
Is there anything else, any part of your story or anything you want to convey that we haven't talked about? I know it's like 40 something years that we could sit here for hours and talk about, but.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. I'm always willing to talk about anything, really. So we can take questions from the audience.
Yes. Oh, perfect. So if you have a question for Joe, reach out to us at Your Oxygen Mask First. Go to the website, fill out the form, and we'll have Joe back and he will take questions. That is an amazing idea.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be a hoot.
Well, thank you, Joe, again for joining us. I really appreciate you going a little bit more in depth in your story and your struggles and how you have risen from the ashes. And now you have an successful life and a beautiful wife and an amazing son, and you're doing it. And you're proof that you can rise above it and you can stay on this earth.
Yeah, totally. And I appreciate you for wanting to bridge the civilian military divide, as well as educate the listeners on things that they might not have a direct exposure to. So I thank you for what you guys are doing.
I'm still learning. I've got a little bit of a learning curve, but I'm still learning. It's very fun, and it's almost like a different culture, a different country, a different language, and it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Is there a cool, fun? Was there a cool, fun story that you want to share with our listeners before we go? Steven talked to me about poop. I don't know if you have something similar, but
yeah, I can tell all kinds of poop stories. But if you already had one, I don't want to double up. So there's this one night, my patrol. We were in Afghanistan, and this is a story I like to tell because it's funny and it's trippy. And we were going through this village in the middle of the night, and it's super dark, but there's this big full moon, and we turn the corner and we end up in this huge field of sunflowers that are all like 10 feet tall with big, huge heads, like the size of a hubcap, you know, and these big giant sunflowers. And so I'm looking around at this and I'm like totally tripped out because it's super funny, but it's super beautiful. And then I had this moment where I was looking through the night vision goggles at the rest of my patrol, and everything through night vision is green. And so here's these big, huge flowers and these green guys like going in between the flowers with these packs on, and they all look like other little insects. And I was like, man, we're like little ladybugs sneaking through the garden. And yeah, that was and I had to pull it together and get back to work. And I was like, man, this is awesome, man.
Did they hear you?
No, it's all in my head.
Okay. Little green ladybugs.
Yeah.
I imagine that things are not what they appear when you're out there in that situation.
Yeah, every situation is different, and some things are exactly as they appear, and some things are exactly not what they appear. And trying to discern that is that's what stress really is all about.
Ooh, that's a good topic for our next one too.
Yeah, how to deal with stress?
Not by drinking, drugs, or pornography. I've learned that this month.
Right. There are better ways. Well, there are other ways.
Yeah, it's up to the individual to decide what's better or not.
That's right. I don't want to begin to assume that I can tell you what's good, better, best.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Joe. And again, we're going to do an Ask Joe segment. So youroxygenmaskfirst.com will have a form. Submit your questions to Joe and he will answer them on our show. Maybe about pornography, alcohol, or narcotics. You never know. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast. And you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.